Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and do I have a show for you today? I know you're interested and excited to get started with the show. So am I, but I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. Find an entrepreneur, find an influencer, an author, a business owner, find a friend, dial a friend, call a friend, text a friend, whatever you have to do. But the information that we share each morning on the Roundtable Talk Show is too important to miss. And you know what? Friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So before we go ahead and introduce our first guest, I have some information for you, something important that I think you should do. This week, the Roundtable Talk Show is supported by Free Lunch Coffee. Free Lunch Coffee is on a mission to end hunger from the lives of underprivileged children. There are children out there who really need your support, yet it can be difficult and intimidating to know where to start and how to help. When you buy one bag of Free Lunch Coffee, you are providing 10 meals to children in need, and Free Lunch Coffee will donate 50% of the money earned to end hunger in the lives of young children. How cool is that? Beyond a fantastic cause, Free Lunch Coffee has great coffee that is specialty grade, certified organic, and it tastes amazing. Use coupon code ROUNDTABLE at checkout for a 10% discount at freelunchcoffee.com. Again, that's Roundtable, two words, at freelunchcoffee.com to get your 10%. So while you're going ahead and entering your discount code to get your coffee, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our very first guest, Ms. Carol Crockman. Carol is a visionary thought leader who is currently CEO of Logos E, Inc. Logos-E is an innovative digital technology company under her leadership. Invented a mobile video multi-platform broadcast platform, patented, published in the USA, which allows video, podcast, and film content to be broadcast through Wi-Fi from the cloud to any mobile smart device. Good morning, Carol. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for the introduction. I'm fine.
You are so welcome. May I have your pillow, Carol?
Oh, everybody loves that pillow, right? When I go to my e-rotary, I always have it right behind me. We're the e-rotary for peace. You should join, Sharifa. You should really join.
Well, tell me about it. I got to learn about it before I can join.
Yeah, it's every Tuesday at evening, and I will invite you to join as a guest next week if you have time. If not, we can do it the week after. It's international. It's part of the Peacemaker Corps, which is the charity that I've been running for years. And it's interesting because the video delivery platform, which just got patented December 1st, I may be the oldest woman in America that got a tech patent, but I did. It took me 4 years and a lot of money. And what it does is it allows you, well, you don't have to have broadband. So we reach you all over the world. You can have the most inexpensive Android phone from China that's cost you, you know, like $12, and you can get the video. So the kids have been the avant-garde for the last, since 16. So the last 4 years that we've launched the app, PSGFF, which is an acronym for Peace in the Street Global Film Festival. We get films now from all over the world, places that don't have broadband, places that don't have 5G, places that don't normally get videos on their phone. And so now we have that behind us, and we know that we have a technology that works and that's free for the kids so it doesn't cost a lot of money. We're partners with AWS, the cloud, Amazon Web Services, and they've been our partner 5-6 years. We're also partners with iHeartMedia, who sends out information about our film festival every year. And Salesforce honored us last year as a grantee. So the Peacemaker Corps has been a big change in the United Nations and in HUD. And now we have this film, we made a movie, and now we've been invited into a new cable channel that Charter is developing all over the country called Canela. And there's 1.6 million homes in Los Angeles that are going to be launching it. And we will be launched on it. It's pretty exciting that these young people's films will be shown to 1.6 million homes in LA. And if Canela is, this, you know, well-funded, they are backed by Fox and they have a great deal of money, they'll be taking this new cable around the country. And they will be showing our young people's films. And everything for the kids is free. Now for the business side of it, we've made a deal with Ingram Micro and Blue Cloud and Honeywell, and we're a silver partner with Honeywell. So we can buy product at a big discount and sell it at the regular retail. But Ingram's going to be taking our software all over the world and training 21,000 of their salesmen on how corporations now can get information for their employees from their on their phone, and it will cost anywhere between $8 a month down to $4 a month, depending on how many of their employees are on the service. And they can broadcast any video that they want, that they make, or they may buy, you know, or they may have in their cloud. And so that way, people who work for major companies and around the world who speak different languages, because we have put in 6 languages, the UN language is 5, there's Japanese, can actually work together without having to be together.
Well, I want to talk about that, Carol. You brought up so many different points that I know we definitely are going to go into, but I want to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Lauren Jenkins. Lauren Jenkins received his bachelor's degree in economics from Campbell University while running Division I track and field for 4 years. He then received his master's degree in finance from the University of East London. After graduating, he worked in foreign exchange as a broker before moving back to Colorado to start MMM, a childhood game his mother and co-founder played with him growing up. Good morning, Lauren. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
I'm excited to have you here. What is MMM?
So yeah, MMM stands for Mini Money Management. And one of my favorite stories to tell is actually where it came from. So we're an app for parents and teachers that helps teach their kids about money using everyday experiences. So when I was 8 and my little sister was 5, we asked my mom to go out to eat every day. And she got fed up with it, and she posted on the refrigerator a job opening for son and for daughter. And so we had to interview for the position. She called our references, and luckily we got the jobs. And it came with a weekly salary, and we had to pay for our rent, our utilities, our laundry. And her big thing was that it was $3 to go out to eat and $1 to stay at home. And so her claim to fame is, by the time we got to the end of the summer, she asked us, like, hey, do you guys want to go out to eat? And we're like, no, that's too expensive. And so I don't really think, like, I understood, like, how important, like, that financial education was for me until I left home. And so I was lucky enough to get a full ride scholarship to go to college, but it was partially athletic, but also partially academic. And I had friends who turned down athletic schools because it wasn't, like, you know, it wasn't the biggest school or, like, the best place. And I went to Buies Creek, North Carolina at Campbell University, and it was, like, the best 4 years, and I got to run Division I track. And then because of that, I was able to move out to London and get my master's degree and work. And I think, like, every walk of life that I've been, I've just seen how much, like, people aren't taught just the basic things of money. I was in school in London, and the biggest mall in London would shut down, and they call it loan drop day. And everything would shut down except for students, and everything was 40 to 60% off on the day that everybody's student loan hits their account because they want to go out and eat and spend their money they're supposed to spend on education. And a lot of the people I went to school with were first generation college students. And so they had never had somebody, like, give them that much money, and they didn't know what to do with it. And then I moved to the finance world, and I had mentors who were making very good money, and they still had maxed out credit cards and unpaid student debt. And so I think, like, just seeing how it doesn't really matter where you're from, you're just not taught money, kind of became a passion for me. And so I moved back home about a year and a half ago now, and started Mini Money Management. So, yeah.
I love it. So now I got to request the interview for your mom, like, with your mom. I got to sit down and talk to her.
Yeah, she's
interviews.
Absolutely. She's a lot cooler than me, so I can don't tell us.
That's important. The lessons that you learned as a child, because I need to interview your mom and find out what would have happened if you didn't get the job. Like, that's what I want to know.
That would have been tough. I should ask. I don't even know what I would have done, you know?
What she would have done, when she got some more kids, what would have happened if you didn't, your references said, you know what, Lauren is not the one to have as a son.
See, I was careful to put down my good references. That's the thing. I knew his friends had my back. So
those are lessons you learned as a child. Lauren, I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Tamia Hayes. Tamia is a modern, multifaceted marketer, from her work with celebrity ambassadors to her development of digital promotional assets, such as event websites and campaigns. She approaches her work with the expertise of a full communications team. With 10 years of experience working in communications, Ms. Hayes has a proven record of accomplishments in digital marketing, multi-channel, and customer outreach platforms. She has a passion for helping organizations build digital marketing efforts to reach more people and is a versatile writer across mediums. Good morning, Tamia. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm excited to have you. I was trying to get Carol's pillow, but I need your...
It's a beautiful poster. Pillow, and I want her glasses. I want her glasses too.
Yes, but I want your poster. Like, I'm collecting things. I got a poster, Carol. Okay. I get that Nina Simone over here.
Yes, I love her. I just want to piggyback quickly off of Lauren saying, "Oh my gosh, we were neighbors." I went to school in undergrad in North Carolina as well. I went to North Carolina Central in Durham. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah,
I know
exactly.
Yes. But hi, my name is Tamia Hayes. Like I said, I went to undergrad at North Carolina Central University, and I earned my master's from American University here in Washington, D.C., which is where I'm from and where I live. My journey is kind of unique because initially I just wanted to be an entertainment journalist. Like, that was my dream. I was like, I'm going to New York. I'm going to, you know, work with, like, Rihanna's going to be my dream client, do PR for her. That's the only way to get into that field. But unfortunately, once I've completed school, we found out that my mom had stage 4 lung cancer. So, so she asked me to move back home with her to help her out. So, you know, when I graduated, the economy was bad. So I started off in government. I worked, funny that you were telling us about like your political career. I worked for a politician for a little over a year and just worked for different government organizations, but I wasn't really passionate about it. So when I started my master's program and just, you know, telling people about my mom and her diagnosis with lung cancer, it's a lot of stigma around lung cancer. So I ended up doing my master thesis on, you know, stigmas of lung cancer and just learned about stigmas for different diseases. Most people don't know that at one time breast cancer was highly stigmatized until two former first ladies came out publicly. And that's when a lot of recognition and research and funding went towards finding a cure for breast cancer. I think we all know HIV and AIDS was highly stigmatized until a lot of public health campaigns, you know, educated the public who did not have necessarily a public health or a medical background. So that's when I started to become passionate working for health nonprofits and running different public health campaigns and awareness campaigns to teach people about different illnesses and diseases and things of that nature. So people will, you know, kind of understand that one, even if you are diagnosed with a, you know, stigmatized disease, that doesn't mean you deserve it. You know, my mom, you know, got cancer from breathing asbestos. And, you know, a lot of people don't know about, you know, former military who were in the Vietnam War. They ended up getting it from, you know, Agent Orange. So just different things like that. And through that journey, I was able to, you know, work with different celebrities who are TV personalities, YouTubers, musicians, to work with me from different organizations to help raise awareness for diseases that are, you know, are either stigmatized or considered rare diseases, for example, pulmonary hypertension. And I currently now work for a national health nonprofit headquartered in Alexandria, Virginia. So, you know, I just love marketing. I love raising awareness. I love helping nonprofits because compared to a big brand like Nike or Adidas, where they have unlimited resources, nonprofits, we don't necessarily have that, but you can still, yes, but you can still make a big impact. As Ms. Carol was just speaking, look at what she's done with her nonprofit. So, you know, I like to work for nonprofits because one is mission focused, but also you can still get that recognition. You can still raise awareness. You can still do some of the cool things like Nike or Adidas are doing with a limited budget. You just have to work hard and just be really creative.
Let's talk about that, Tamia, because we went in a different direction, and this is rare, you know, because I like it. It's a great thing. But usually when someone presents a bio, and then it's like, okay, now my focus is on nonprofits, which I find very interesting, because I always say everything I've done, none of it was planned. You know, all I wanted to do 26 years ago was be a stay-at-home mom. That was my initial direction, you know, and now I wound up here. So reading your bio, it's like there's a passion for marketing and business. You're like, nope, let's help the people. Let's focus on nonprofits. Let's heal the world. So I like it. I'm going to come back to you, Tamia. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Charles Tabb. Charles spent 30 years teaching English to middle and high school students. Once he retired from that career, he set out on the one he truly always wanted, that of a writer. He considers himself a multi-genre author, writing stories that range from humor to horror. His stories have been published by online literary journals, and his debut novel, Floating Twigs, A Boy, A Dog, and the Power of Love, was featured in the September 1st issue of Kirkus Reviews. Good morning, Charles. How are you?
Good morning. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. I need something around you. You know, I need a pillow, a poster, something.
How about my mug?
I'll take that, I guess.
Here's a copy of Floating Twig. So
I'll take that. I'll take that.
I will gladly send you one.
The dog, the man, the dog.
A boy, a dog, and the power of love. Yeah, that's the subtitle. So yeah.
Okay. So I get the boy. I get the dog. Let's talk about the power of love.
Oh, boy. Before I go into that, can I just say it's really interesting how the unexpected interconnectedness of people occurs.
Yes.
I did all of my teaching in North Carolina, most of it in Winston-Salem. So,
shoot.
Hello.
Hello. But you know what's so interesting? Thank you for bringing that up, Charles, is that when I launched this show on the 30th of March, I was so nervous. I was like, how do you put together five complete strangers from five different backgrounds, five different industries, and have a conversation? And what I've learned over 150 odd shows is that we have more in common than we do that we have that's different.
That is so true. Now, to the power of love, this book grew out of a childhood experience that was so traumatic to me, I never mentioned it to anybody, not even my mother at the time. But to me, if we can learn how to love and how to love properly, the entire human race will be so much better off. It really is a thing that I feel can propel us to be our best selves. And when I say to love properly, I know some people who tend to love themselves more than anybody else. And that kind of selfish love is destructive. It's not only self-destructive, but destructive to the people around us. So as I wrote this book, I wanted to create a situation where this boy, who is the son of alcoholic parents, he's turning 13 at the beginning of the book, and he has like 40 strikes against him because of that. But because he is able to find people who love him for who he is and don't expect anything from him, and only want him to be the best person he can be, because of that, he is able to overcome all of these obstacles in his life and to get around them. And so with that idea, I set out to write a book like any writer of fiction. You write a book to change the world. And so I kind of kept that in my mind as I was writing the book, is I wanted people to read this and be affected by it.
I think that's very interesting. I can hear passion. I can hear the emotion in your voice when you speak. Like, this is important to you. This matters. This is not something that you just got up one night, wrote a couple of hours, and put this book out there. But I want to go back to something you said, just for clarity's sake, when you said people who love themselves more than others. I always think of the example when you're on a plane, you always put your mask on first before you put on anybody else's, you know? So I understand the aspect of, you know, not loving other people, but aren't you supposed to love yourself the most?
You are supposed to love yourself, and probably the most, I'm certain for that. But the situation is there are too many people that get caught up in only loving themselves, mm-hmm. and everybody else's love is supposed to be focused back on them. Mm-hmm. That if they love someone, then that love needs to be returned, not only in kind, but perhaps tenfold. Mm-hmm. And I've known people like that, and I'm sure we all have, where, I mean, yes, we love ourselves. We should love ourselves. And it's important that we love ourselves, but not to the exclusion of everyone else. And when we can love somebody enough to change their lives and to have a positive influence on them and to love somebody else in that way, to me, I think that is life-changing, world-changing.
What are some of the reviews you've had on the book?
A lot of people compare it to Kill a Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. Which I was really humbled when that happened. People have said that it has stuck with them, that they wrote their reviews. This is just reader reviews I'm talking about right now, that they would write the review days after finishing reading the book because they couldn't separate themselves from all of the thoughts that the book struck in them. And so that to me is very powerful. I was in a panel one time back when we could actually get together and be with people. And I mentioned that one person had written in a review that she got very little sleep while she was reading the book because she would stay up so late reading because she couldn't put it down. And another person, I'm not sure why this was said, but another person on the panel said, well, I'm not sure that's so good, you know, not getting sleep. And my comment for that was, well, it's better than putting people to sleep if you're a writer. So, you know, I'm actually really humbled by the response it has gotten. It's been read by approximately 70,000 people. That I know a publishing industry considers 10,000 to be good. So I think that's pretty good. I'm wanting to be able to celebrate the 100,000th person to read it. Yes. And then of course to move on, because to me, the reason I want people to read it isn't to enrich me, it's to enrich themselves. because I feel that the book really can do that.
Absolutely. I'm going to come back to you, Charles. I want to go ahead and introduce, you're welcome, our next guest, Mr. Terry Suro. Terry is a member of the Travelers Century Club and has visited well over 100 countries. Coming from an engineering and business background, Terry has focused on the integration of engineering systems, human psychology, and healthcare within the travel industry. Terry met his wife skydiving and moved to her hometown of Buffalo, where he became one of the founders of TAP, Travel Awareness Psychology Research Group in the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus. Good morning, Terry. How are you? Where's Terry?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Terry.
From sunny Buffalo. Doing great.
I read your bio and I love the travel industry. I mean, just certain keywords just kind of get to me because my first job out of high school was TWA, Transworld Airlines. I don't work for Cheap Tickets, American Express, Platinum Travel. So travel is my passion. Well over 100 countries, Terry?
Yes.
Yes. So when did you start traveling? When did this become a passion of yours?
I started traveling since I was very young, primarily because of my dad's business. I'm from Peru originally. Mm-hmm. And my father was in the mining business, but specifically managing the Andean Pact, which was the first trade treaty between nations. Mm-hmm. So we moved a lot throughout Latin America, Argentina, Peru, even Miami, which you could argue is part of South America or not. But that was always inside the family. And I also had an uncle of mine who owned one of the largest travel agencies in Peru. So I was always exposed to it.
Mm-hmm. And you enjoy it?
Very much so. Not just from the feeling that it gives, but on the impact that it can have. And for that reason, actually, right now I'm embarrassed, I'm pissed, and I'm hopeful with everything that's going on. And I know that travel...
But why are you embarrassed, though? Why are you embarrassed?
Yeah. I'll tell you why I'm embarrassed. The travel industry has always been, or we always gloated about being all-inclusive, worldly, yet when it came to this COVID, we were caught totally off guard like many other industries, but we shouldn't have. You know, we heard about Zika, oh, that's Brazil, who cares about that? Ebola, that's happening in Africa, doesn't affect us. COVID, that's happening in China. Well, the reason is that this is not, we're all one world. And we are connected. So this should not have caught us off guard. We should have been ready for this. Of all industries, we should have been the ones ready for the globalization of it. And yeah, it's embarrassing.
You're interesting. You remind me of what Tamia was saying, that whole passion for politics. Like I see somewhere, have you ever considered politics?
Not yet.
You might, you know, because you're passionate. This is embarrassed. We're embarrassed for the world. We're embarrassed for this country. Let's do something now. Like, I can see that as a maybe it's just me. Am I alone?
No, I think he's
no. Right.
I think the travel industry should have been a leader in this, knowing that spreading the disease would come on their shoulders. I agree. He's right. They were sort of left flat-footed, as they used to say, you know, had to kind of catch up. Because I'm with you, Terry. I lived in China. I've lived all around the world. I love to travel. I miss it terribly. I was throwing all my junk away. That's one of the things you do when you're at home and you want to get rid of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe how many air tickets that I was throwing away that had been canceled, how many times I'd been on an airplane, how many places I'd been. And I miss it. Because we are an international charity and we get films from all over, but I miss actually learning about it. And I love Peru. Peru is one of the most favorite places for me to have visited. Machu Picchu is incredible. Kyo, I spent a week up there with my late son. We had a wonderful time.
Absolutely. Lauren, you were agreeing as well.
Yeah, so Terry, I actually want to make you feel a little bit better. The education space didn't do any better than the travel industry. Might have done worse. But like, I guess like my thought is like, who did any industry handle COVID well at all? So like, I obviously know the ed tech space very well. I work with teachers and principals and people at the district level. And if anybody, and they had an entire summer of like 3 months off to not to like essentially prepare for what was going to happen. Like they knew that the pandemic was a thing. It had started the school year before, and they had 3 months to do something, and nothing happened. So, I mean, the travel industry didn't do it. The education sector didn't do it. I don't know. I mean,
retail didn't do it either.
Who didn't?
Retail.
Retail. Oh. Restaurants probably been the best about it, and they get shut down more than any. Like, restaurants are the cleanest, they've been the most innovative, and they're like the first things that people shut down, which is just mind blowing to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've kind of gone about the whole thing backwards. So the response has been, I mean, we were caught with our pants down, but the problem was we'd had our pants down for months and didn't realize it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Terry is right. I think the travel industry has always been very security conscious, very hands-on with the constituents and their, and not only the employees, but their, but the people that was their customers. I mean, they're probably the most, I don't know, diligent about safety, and yet they couldn't. It took so long to come up with a plan. If they'd come up with a plan and said, look, we're only going to sell half the seats and we're going to do this and we're going to do that, you know, people would have been traveling and felt more comfortable traveling.
And Carol, I wouldn't argue that there is no plan. This plan is still not set up.
And that's ridiculous. I mean, for an industry that has been so focused, I mean, when you think about the small percentage of accidents that happen in air travel or train travel, I mean, it goes down. And they should have been leading the plan for safety for COVID. Really. We don't have anybody doing that right now. And that's what I hear from the kids when they send us this year's videos. Very much involved with why is somebody not taking charge of this across the world.
Carol, that's exactly what we're trying to do. And we basically start a coalition of independent operators, basically trying to bypass all the politics, cross-cultural, cross-national politics, to create a solution in which we can. Yes, we were affected. Yes, it was horrible for us not to be ready for it. At the same time, I think we're critical for the solution of it. Not just from, as Charles mentioned, about love, but also teaches empathy. It really ties back to our own communities, politically and socioeconomically. When you understand what's going on in the world, it's easier to sympathize and empathize with that going home. It reminds me of one of the research studies that we did, which involved families going to developing countries. And we had families who were telling us that their teenager, the child was too young for this trip. And it bothered me personally. I'm like, no, travel's good. Why are they saying this? But it was more than one family. We heard this as a constant theme for many of them. So we did a study, and the study told us that tweens from wealthier families that hadn't traveled much, many times had tantrums during the trips, which we thought was fascinating. And what ended up being was that these children and parents, for that matter, had no link socially or empathetic to the homeless people in their own town, just because the world was so different that they didn't understand it. So when they were faced with suddenly poverty or developing countries, many of the children were confused by it. For the first time, they're a minority. Second of all, they see poverty, but yet these poor people are smiling. And that's a conflict in knowledge. So what happens is that, you know, everything we've been taught as children is study hard, get good grades, get good university in North Carolina or anywhere else, and get a good job, make lots of money, and you'll be happy. And suddenly they're facing a situation in which they're saying, that's BS. These children are smiling more than I do, more than my friends do, and they don't have the money. Mm-hmm. So in the middle of the trip, they'll start lashing out at mom and dad just because the core values are being challenged. So they feel lied to. They can't vocalize it. They don't even know it, but it shows that way in the trip. and through the correct design, that can be solved.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because we also reference the more than love. So I want to go over to Charles and give Charles an opportunity to respond. One of the things that you mentioned, Charles, was that there was a situation, an incident, or something happened with your childhood that brought this to your attention. So when you were writing this book, when you started the process to write this book, how did you come up with the realization that love was the answer to all of these situations?
Through 60 years of living, really.
That was an honest answer. That was
really. I mean, it's just a situation. I taught for 30 years, and I loved my students. A lot of them are my Facebook friends now. I would tell them after they graduated, I said, I will not ask to friend you, but if you would like to friend me, you can. And I dare say any of them that you asked, did Mr. Tab love you? They would say yes. And to me, it made all the difference in my teaching because there's a saying in education, the kids don't care what you know until they know you care. And I really took that to heart. I was just raised to care about people, to love people. And to be honest, I was not really raised in an extremely religious home. Not to say that my parents weren't religious in some facet, but it wasn't like we're very religious kind of people. So it wasn't that Jesus tells you to love. I'm not trying to downplay that. But it was really a case of it's the human thing to do is to love people.
Yes. Because even if you're a spoiled, rotten brat who has everything and you go to this other country where they have nothing, it's still in us to love.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I did not tell my mother about the incident that was so traumatic to me is I knew it would also be traumatic to her to know that I had lived through that incident. And so it was always, I mean, and I wasn't even 11 years old yet when that happened, but I was raised to understand that what you say and what you do affects people, whether you want it to or not.
Absolutely.
And it's like I have a lot of keepsakes from students that were to remind me that even the quietest student in my class was important in getting things from what I said.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to go over to Tamia. You've been so quiet, but you came out and you led with your passion, you know, because I'm thinking we're going to get all the marketing strategies, tips, guidelines. You're going to start selling us. And you're like, you know what? I changed my life. I stopped everything for my mom, which is kind of what Charles was saying. Even as a child, he was a protector of his mom. He wanted to protect her memory and her thoughts. Tamia, what are your thoughts so far on the conversation, specifically what Terry was mentioning as far as travel and the way the children responded?
To piggyback off of Lorne, more specifically, I definitely agree that the education sector was not prepared. I have a six-year-old son, and literally, you know, the school year starts in August. We found out late July that he's going to be 100% remote learning, and that, okay, we got to hurry up and get these type of supplies. I'm like, they gave us everything at the last minute. And because of COVID, thankfully, I was already in the mind space of, I already know he's going to be working from, you know, learning from home. I was proactive in ordering things early, for example, like a desk for him to have at home. And literally once this, you know, the schools made the announcements, the desks were back ordered until October. And I feel like the school systems knew in a sense that these kids weren't going back. It's not safe for them to go back. So why are you telling us parents? Because not all parents have the luxury or can afford some of these items. You know, not every parent can wait at the last minute and order a desk or buy all these different school supplies that normally are, you know, provided by the school. Or you got to also think about meals. Like I'm at Costco, I feel like every other week, you know, but not every parent can afford that. So, you know, sometimes you need to start mentally preparing and budgeting for that. And then also to talk about, I also agree with in terms of the public transportation, because I'm in a relationship with someone who does work for, you know, Amtrak. And, you know, initially they were just running trains as much as possible, but then a lot of the employees started catching COVID. And I will say, to play devil's advocate, on the flip side, I also understand why they haven't been proactive in being a leader, because now with a lot of these public, you know, transportation companies, it's a lot of change of leadership and they're furloughing left and right. So a lot of them, you know, a lot of these employees at this point aren't even worried about how they're handling it on the public side, because, you know, his hours have been cut drastically, which impacts us because we got a mortgage, we have a baby, we have bills. Whether you furloughed or not, you still have to pay your bills. So he's more worried about, okay, am I going to actually be furloughed? Because my hours have already been cut in half. So my paycheck is half of what I was making every 2 weeks. So I will also say, on the other side, like, the unions have been fighting for these employees just to stay gainfully employed during this, you know, troubling time. So
powerful.
Yeah. So I see it on both sides, just because I'm personally connected to it. But in terms of the education, like, even when I was watching, like, the different, you know, the mayors, the governors, I was just like, why are you guys prolonging making the official announcement when you know these babies aren't going to school? And you got to also keep, you know, remember too, like, a 6-year-old, my son is wondering, why can't he go back to school?
Yes. Yeah, so why can't he see his friends, and why their world has changed? Carol, talk to us. I know you were agreeing with Tamia.
Well, I think that there's been a huge amount of missed opportunities from the very beginning. And we knew that this pandemic had hit China, wherever it started, and that it was serious, and that there was something happening out there. We knew that the beginning of this year. I remember I was invited, as I said, the Peacemaker became a grantee of Salesforce. And so they had their big free event in New York, the end of December. And in Javits Center, there must have been 600,000 people all coming from all over the world. And I was there with my team, and I thought about it later that, you know, COVID was coming from Europe and Asia, and we didn't even know about it. We weren't even told about it. And there are people that make their living worrying, whether it's the schools. I totally agree with Tamia. This is ridiculous. The schools knew that children were going to be exposed to this virus. How could they not? And they didn't make any plans. And then they laid it all out on the parents because, like you said, you have to get different books and things that you would get in school for your children. Now you have to do it at home. And then you have to take the time to make sure they're doing their work at home, where you have your own job to deal with. You have your own life that you've set up. I'm just shocked in my age, because I've been around longer than all of you, that this country and this world was not prepared to take on a virus that they can't even see. I mean, we've been through the Ebola. We've been through AIDS. We know polio took 22 years for them to get us a vaccine. And there's still places where it's still rampant, because that's something that Rotary works with. I run a small company and a large nonprofit. And frankly, the nonprofit didn't miss a beat because we were being driven by the children. Mm-hmm. There it is. This is for kids under 18, and they didn't want to miss out on what was going on. And even though they didn't have a teacher or were doing it from home, we got the most incredible films this year from all over the world, but not here. We got very few from the United States, which means that we've done the worst job, I think, in trying to figure out how to live and deal with this pandemic. It was like we didn't want to think about it for 6 months or face it. We didn't want to plan when we think we're the best in the world, we never made a plan.
Yes, absolutely. Now we do have a question from the audience. Sophia Pavlov has a question. She wants to know, and I'm going to ask this question to Terry, and then after that, if anyone else wants to respond. Sophia says, so what will travel look like for 2021?
Yeah, there's two schools of thought. One is that vaccines are going to come out, everything's going to be fine, by summer we'll be traveling. I think that's personally very unrealistic. The realism is that travel will gradually start. And to do it right as an industry, we need to be able to address individuals' risk factor. How many want to take more risk? How many want to take less risk? And that's going to be the key thing is one of the things we haven't done globally or especially here in the U.S., is be able to understand the other side. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure we are inclusive and do it in a safe manner. But I think travel will start hopefully getting towards normalcy back in 2022. We're seeing some of the first travelers maybe this late summer, fall.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So Carol agrees. Tamia, I see you.
And I think it also depends with some of the travel agencies who you're targeting, because you got to remember too, COVID, the older you are, depending on your health, like if you have underlying health issues, of course, someone who might be in their 80s isn't willing to travel as much as someone in their 20s, because a lot of the young people, like, if I catch it, I'll be okay. Which is why they're encouraging us to wear a mask and, you know, take certain precautions, because people like millennials like myself, I see a lot of my friends still traveling, and my younger sister's getting ready to go to Mexico in 2 weeks. She's like, you know, I'll be okay. I'll just take certain precautions. And one of my best friends caught COVID and she's fine. So I honestly think also it depends on the age range as well. And to Terry's point, I think as the years go on, especially in 2022, then you'll start seeing older people, more families start traveling again, versus like young single people who are living on their own. It's kind of like, well, I don't have to put my parents at risk. And if I'm remote, I can travel, stay home, quarantine, and I'll be okay.
Excellent point. Very interesting, Terry.
So, and to add to that though, yes, of course, age has a big factor in it. But it's also your beliefs. Not to get blue or red, people are more risk averse. As an industry, we're first very much against the spreading of COVID. But I was talking to one of our partners in Mexico, saying, you know, as much as I am considered probably liberal, it's the conservatives or the people who are traveling right now, which are disregarding COVID, who are keeping our companies alive. I don't think it's as simple as, you know, just age. It goes back to the fundamental of people. We're different. Mm-hmm. And we need to find a way in which we can respect that. And those who want to travel, irresponsible or not, according to my beliefs, there should be a way in which we do it as safe as possible. That's why we started with Travel COVID Safe. Instead of waiting for the industry to come up with a set of guidelines, which they did, everybody did. Every country came up with the guidelines. Even the WTDC started their own guidelines for everywhere. WTDC, by the way, is the World Travel and Tourism Council. But everybody was doing it from a relatively selfish perspective. It was trying to bring tourism back to them. It was biased. Some of them, like the WTDC, doesn't even do any audits. So you just tell me, Sharifa, that you're doing it right, and I'll give you the stamp. Mm-hmm. So what we've started doing is creating a coalition of different providers in each country that can create safe travel pathways. So we can guarantee that all the people handling the itinerary have been trained, have been accredited or certified by a real certification. It's to promote travel as soon as we can for those who want to, but do it in a responsible way.
Yes. Tamia, you were going to respond?
No, I agree with, to your point, Terry, depends on political affiliations, but I also do think it has to do with age, and that's just me speaking with a lot of my peers. I and liberal, and majority of my friends are as well. And I know, like, I just had a friend that just traveled to North Carolina who's single, has no kids during COVID. Like I said, I know another person who went to Mexico and also went out of the country as well. And a lot of the people that I know personally are doing that, again, are single millennials, not millennials who are taking care of, of a family member who have kids. And I don't know, Lauren, if you've seen any of your friends or people from college, a lot of, millennials, a lot of young, and even baby boomers are starting to travel again, whether they're, liberal, conservative or not, just because, again, I know just a lot, me personally, if they're healthy, they feel like
I think there's not to cut you off, but that's what I tend to do here. But I think there's a balance. I see your point, Tamia. Yes. I see your point, Terry. And I don't think it's a either or. I'm 44 years old. I live in Long Beach, California. I went to Seattle, Washington in September. I was a speaker at a rally. So my thought was, is it more important for me to go speak at this rally and talk about the issues that we face in America? Or was it more important for me to stay home? And even though I'm older, so I think there's an aspect of the single aspect that you're pointing out is who, is around me that I may risk. For me, that wasn't anyone. Like you said, I can come in, I could quarantine, and then I could go on with my life. Whereas one of the people that I know that's having the most difficult time is a dear friend of mine. I always talk about her, Mrs. Martin. Mrs. Martin will actually be 99 on December 14th. And she's one of those people that you mentioned, Tamia, who's over 80. So before COVID, this lady would walk a mile each way to wherever she wanted to go, a mile back. So she's walking 2 miles a day. She was going to yoga class. She was going to Tai Chi class. She was going to the senior center. When COVID hit, all the buses that she normally took, now they only operate once every 4 hours. Plus she's over 80. So people were like, you cannot leave the house. You cannot have anyone in. So she's been sitting on the couch since March, calling me with all these wonderful, wonderful stories that I love. So I see so many issues. And I think if it was just one clear cut answer, we would have all solved this problem months ago. And so that's why we've been having so much debate, so many discussions. But I love talking. I love having this conversation. But we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Lauren.
Yeah, thank you. So kind of to everybody's point here, we've talked a lot about the travel industry and COVID. And I think like what Terry mentioned is that a lot of the big companies, they were essentially self-interested, and that they did it, a lot of it for money. They take a lot of those things for money. And that's a big reason why I started Mini Money Management, is to show people that you can, and we're a for-profit company, is to show people that you can do good in the world. And then you can also make a lot of money doing it, and to kind of change the narrative around, okay, well, let's just be self-interested and help only ourselves. And that's the only way to get rich. So yeah, if you're a parent who has kids, please check out the app. It's just minimoneymanagement.com. We also partner with banks, credit unions, influencers, insurance agents. Like, our biggest thing is whoever cares about teaching kids about finances, just get in contact. Because I think a lot of the problems that we see today all kind of come back to the misuse and the greed around money. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that we touched on today where I think the root of it is money. And that's why we do what we do. So, yeah, go to minimoneymanagement.com and check it out.
Yes, I'll definitely be having that conversation because I'm passionate. So we'll see if we can work out some kind of partnership. Charles, what do you have for us?
Well, first of all, you need to care about everybody, please. Wearing a mask is not the government trying to control you. It is an expectation that you're human and that you care about yourself and others. If you get COVID and it doesn't affect you, wonderful, but it might kill your grandparents. And they might get it from you. So please don't do that. Learn to love, learn to care. I do write in a variety of genres. I also have a detective series that's out that's very different from Floating Twigs. I've got another book that's coming out early 2021 called Canary's Song. That's canaries with the apostrophe after the S, plural. So I'm here promoting myself and my books. So please go to charlestab.com. That's two B's in tab, and check it out. And you can sign up for my newsletter. It's very brief. It's very like interpersonal relationship kind of talk. And I do recommend books while I'm in there as well. So it only comes out once a month. So if you want to sign up for the newsletter, that would be great too. Thank you very much.
You are very welcome. They can sign up at charlestab.com. Thank you, Charles. Tomia, what do you have for us?
Like Charles said, just be careful, be mindful of others during this challenging time. We'll get through this together. Terry, I hope we can travel in 2022 because I really miss taking my annual family vacations with my baby and my fiance. But again, you know, this has been a great conversation. Everything you guys are doing is amazing. Feel free to follow me on LinkedIn. My name is Tamia Hayes. I share a lot of advice on, you know, LinkedIn marketing, social media marketing, website tips and designs and things of that nature. And yeah, and again, if you can, please support your local nonprofits, because you know, during this challenging time, a lot of them had to slash their budgets, but then still had to work at the same capacity prior to COVID. So if you can, this holiday season, give from your heart. And like y'all said, just love, continue loving.
Powerful, powerful. Speaking of nonprofits, Carol, what do you have for us?
Well, first of all, I'd like everybody to download the app. Now that's Peace in the Street Global Film Festival. It's PSGFF on your iPhone or any Android device. You'll be amazed at the films that are in our cloud that you can see. Next week, December 15, we will be playing our award ceremony, and it will be on YouTube. You'll be able to find it on our YouTube channel, which is Peacemaker Corp, or PSGFF. You can also find it on the web. It'll be on UN television, it'll be on Spectrum, and it will be replayed on our website, which both our Facebook website, which is peacemakercorps.org, and also on our regular website, which is psgff.org. And the more people that watch it, the better for us for next year. We always, we ending on the 15th of December, and we open the festival on Martin Luther King's birthday on January 15th. We do that every year. And thank you, Sharifa. You have been great. All the panelists have been wonderful. Everybody out there, stay safe and listen to your heart when you have something to do. And you will get the right answer, I promise.
That was powerful. I like that. Listen to your heart. Terry, what do you have for us?
Three simple words: travel, travel, travel. First of all, I'm humbled to be with this group. But I think the answer to a lot of our issues right now is travel. And I'm not talking about traveling physically. You can also travel with movies. Especially the movies that she's mentioning. It's a wonderful way to connect to other cultures. But right now, it's about love, it's about empathy, and it's also about depression. When we look at things we're going through, our children go through these things, and they feel cheated. Why me? Why us? And you go outside and look at other cultures and see what they're going through, you realize that, you know, we are very lucky, and we are, for the most part. We are a very lucky society, in which we do have a healthcare system that can still support us. But travel as soon as you can, as comfortable as you can, do it safely. And that's what we want, that's what we're providing through Travel COVID Safe. The website is www.travelcovidsafe.com or .org. And it's just a way in which you can find out how to travel as safe as you want to or can.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have to check it out. My brother lives in Australia and he is so restless because he's used to traveling the world. And right now he cannot leave Australia. So he's like, man, I have to get out of here. So I definitely understand. I definitely agree. This was a great show. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. We definitely appreciate your support. But please, don't just watch the show. Don't just share the show. Please visit our guests, visit their websites, follow them on social media. They came here this morning to help you, to provide you with information, knowledge, and guidance for your life. So support them. Their information is in the Facebook post. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I might be able to help your business, or maybe you want to pick up your tickets to my New Year, New You 2-day teleconference on December 29th and 30th, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Bye.